Well, my name is David Wolfe, and I'm here with Mr. Tom Thacker in Cincinnati, and it's February 8th, 2008, and we're going to sit today and talk a little bit about his upbringing in Covington, Kentucky, and his experience with school at the William Grant High School in Covington, and then on to college basketball and on into the professional ranks. So, how are you doing today, Mr. Thacker?
Oh, very well, thank you. Very well.
Well, if you could just start off, tell me a little bit about your upbringing. You did, I guess you were born in Covington?
Born in Covington, Kentucky, 1939. November the 2nd, 1939. Born there, went to school throughout my entire life in Covington. Went to Our Savior Catholic School. ACYO ball, basketball, football, not football, I was too skinny for football, baseball and basketball primarily. Then junior high school, 8th grade, I went to Lincoln Grant is considered Lincoln Grant from elementary to high school. High school considered William Grant. That's how they distinguish William Grant and Lincoln Grant. But all of it's one building.
William Grant was the high school grades?
High school grades, right.
Okay.
And Lincoln Grant was the elementary. So I went to Lincoln Grant, 8th grade, from Our Savior. And from Lincoln Grant, I went up to high school, William Grant, and graduated. And on through, naturally, University of Cincinnati from William Grant High School.
Now, tell me about Our Savior. I've heard of that school before. That was a Catholic school?
Catholic school. It was, a matter of fact, William Grant was located on 9th Street.
9th and Greenup?
9th and Greenup, and Our Savior was on 10th and Prospect, was one block away. And I lived on Robin, and Robin, which is one block away, so I was pretty much close. I went to take a shortcut. I hit Our Savior, take two shortcuts, I hit William Grant, so... Within two blocks from the school, Our Savior, Our Savior discontinued being a elementary and high school, and I'm trying to get to the precise year. It was way before Grant, I think. It was sometime 1970. And most of the kids from Our Savior went to either Covington Catholic or other Catholic schools in and around Covington. Newport, most of the kids also from Newport, Newport, Kentucky.
Was Our Savior, were black kids going to Our Savior before they were going to, before any desegregation otherwise? I mean, was
that? It was two schools, two black schools in Covington. And one was a Catholic school, which was Our Savior.
So Our Savior was strictly black students when you were...
Strictly black students.
Okay.
Right. And Lincoln Grant was strictly black student for a public school. So it was a public school and a Catholic school. We did have two schools in our Covington. But as I mentioned before, we had had a nice program at Our Savior, good bringing up, and consequently, it didn't exist as long as Grant exists. I went on to William Grant High School.
Were you Catholic growing up? Did you go to a Catholic church?
I went to Catholic church, Our Savior Catholic Church. Yeah.
Was there a good percentage of the, was there a good percentage of black population that were Catholic in Covington?
Well, I think the percentage of black population that was Catholic out of all the blacks, I would say 10%. It was a small minority group.
Enough to have a school, grade school.
Anywhere from 10 to 15%, you know. But a lot of kids also Catholic came from Newport, Newport, Kentucky. During that time, Newport, Kentucky had no integrations, and there was, I think, Newport probably had about 15, 20% Catholics over there. And most of the kids from Newport, Kentucky also went to Lincoln Grant High School until integration started, and then they went to Newport Public and Newport Catholic and the rest of the Catholic schools throughout Calma County.
Mm-hmm. What was daily life like in your neighborhood? Just, you know, not in the school so much, but out in the community or outside the school domain.
Oh, it was. Well, during that time, you know, as a kid, you covered the entire world. I never came to Cincinnati because I wasn't allowed to come to Cincinnati. I think I was halfway allowed to go to Newport. So we just played in Covington. As being in our early teens, we thought Covington was a world, which it was. And we visited all the parks throughout Covington, you know, the woods. It was pretty much wooded during that time. Lakes, a lot of lakes out there, wooded. So we had a great time. We had a guarded life in Covington because it was a very small community. It wasn't a large city. Our parents knew where we were because, as I mentioned before, our neighbors was different in those days. Our neighbors check on us as well as our parents check on us. And it wasn't you could only roam, I think Covington probably like 7.7 miles, square miles. So it wasn't like you got lost in a large city. You know, and plus you only had so many areas you could go to in Covington.
What did your parents do?
My mother was a homemaker. She just pretty much raised three girls and two boys. We had family. Our father worked for the Green Line Bus Transportation Company, which is now Tank. So he was a worker there, and that was it.
Did you interact much with the white kids in either in athletics or otherwise in your early years of school?
Oh yeah, we had, as a matter of fact, during the summer and during the other than school, we had basketball games at Goble Park, which was down in Fifth and Philadelphia, down in west side of Covington. We played in Daytona Terrace, which is outside of west side of town. We played in Newport, and you know, amongst the white players, 15th in Maryland, which is also, and the white kids came to our area. So we interact. We played football against them, baseball against them. It was pretty much a interaction. You know, naturally there was conflict in terms of racial conflict. So it was a good and bad. And we endured it. We knew the difference between good and bad. We knew the kids we could play with, the kids we couldn't play with. So we knew the area we could go to, the area you couldn't go to. So it was pretty much safely guarded with the knowledge of knowing where it was prejudice during that time, and only certain place you go to. So we didn't violate that at unknown boundary lines. We just stayed with the non-boundary lands.
Were these organized games and that you're talking about here, or just sort of casual? Did the kids put these games together?
Oh, it's casual games. It's just summer games. And then some games were organized, and summer games were like summer basketball leagues, and also football leagues and baseball leagues, softball leagues. We organized and played against each other. But we played among ourselves because we also had organized leagues among ourselves. And we consider those the best because of better competition. We consider a better competition. And usually when we played the white teams, it was, you know, we pretty much dominated them. And until we played the black team, that's why we stayed with it all day. And really the white kids came to us to play because of the competition. They wanted to get better, so they came to us to play. In our communities.
When you said there were certain places you would go and certain ones you didn't, and you kind of knew where the barriers were, you said, I mean, how can you better explain that to me? I mean, how did one know that as a kid, and what defined that? I mean, what?
Well, we know it as a kid because communication with other kids, they get in trouble by going to taboo places, or so to speak, and word of mouth got around real fast. They had trouble the west side of town, 19th Street. So we wouldn't go to 19th Street, west side of town. They had certain trouble, a certain type of a group of kids that hung out on the down on Maryland Avenue, so we wouldn't go to Maryland Avenue. On the west side of town, 9th and Philadelphia, so we wouldn't go to 9th and Philadelphia. It was something like that, you know.
You heard the experience of some friends and you just knew better.
Yeah, plus, or you may encounter the same touristic aggressiveness, so you sort of avoided those places.
Well, when you went into, you entered William Grant High School, I guess, in the 9th grade.
Entered 8th grade.
8th grade, okay.
Yeah.
When did you start playing basketball for them? That same year?
Same year, 8th grade, yeah.
Were you playing on the high school team by then?
I played on the JV Junior Varsity team, and I was so much advanced with the guys. High school coach picked me to play on the varsity team also. So I played three quarters of the JV game, and then dressed the fourth quarter, I got dressed for the varsity game. We were so far ahead in the JV game because we won JV games by so many margin points. We was overpowered. We were just that good. So I was able to get dressed in the fourth quarter. I didn't play in the fourth quarter, so I was dressed for the varsity game. And so I started playing varsity ball in the 8th grade, right?
Was Jim Brock your first coach?
Jim Brock, first coach, right.
Tell me a little bit about him, your relationship with him, what your viewpoint was of him as a teenager.
I guess 8th grade, and Jim Brock really just came out of Tuskegee Institution. He was kid out of Tuskegee. I guess when you graduate from Tuskegee, you're pretty much 22, 23 years old. But 22, 23 years old, I guess 13, 14, 15 years old, kid, that's old, man.
Right.
That's considered old. So, and, you know, as I look back to it right now, I say, well, Jim wasn't older than we were. You know? He was a kid himself, but he was a young whippersnapper. He was a good tennis player, good basketball player also. And he came, he brought a good style. He brought a running style, a very conditioned style, a physical condition breeds success. You know, if you don't have the ability, at least you have the ability to run and compare strength and endurance with the opponents. And if you can outrun them, speed and endurance, you probably the greater percentage of winning the game was on your side. So he was a conditions coach. Plus, he knew his basketball because he was a former basketball player himself. And my experience with Jim Brock, we all experienced that he was a no nonsense coach, and he got the most out of his players. And that's one thing I've noticed. When I can look back, I can see some of the players that played for Jim Brock, that he did get the most out of all those players. And I don't care, one grade after other grade, one group of kids graduate, and he got another group of kids in the wings waiting. And he just kept the talent and the skill level kept rising. As long as he stayed there, skill level and talent expectation continued to rise. And he was the most impressive coach, naturally, I've seen, because, you know, being a young 50-year-old kid, you don't have too many coaches before you. So he made a world of difference in my game and my thought process.
What was his relationship to the team and your teammates?
Oh, teammate, he had a good relationship. Jim, like I say, he wasn't that far, many years far removed than us. You know, he was in his early 20s, and he pretty much knew what's going on in our mind. I love devious minds. He pretty much knew how we was thinking and how we thought, you know. So we had a pretty good relation, you know. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like a large span of 30 years difference or nothing like that. It was he was pretty much within our class.
Kind of more, would you say he was kind of like a big brother, or?
Yeah, he's a player. He was a player's coach, you know, and pretty much he knew, he advised you of things that you was thinking about not to do before you got in trouble with. So he was advisor. He's a big brother, as you mentioned, big brother as a coach.
Advice outside the game you're talking about.
Outside the game, right. not, you know, not only as a coach, but he advised you as life, as you go through life, this is what will happen to you. This, these things you're gonna, these are pitfalls you gotta avoid. And as I mentioned before, during those days, you know, you didn't have a wide selection of people or places you could go. And we traveled down a narrow, a parallel road that wasn't going to curve too many times in our life, and Brock knew that. Had been a black person raised in the South, and he knew, so he advised us properly as to, you know, how to conduct ourselves, and where the bends and the roads, how to hold and how to fold, you know.
When you first started playing varsity basketball, do you remember what year that was? Can you recall that?
That's been so long.
Was this probably about 55, 56?
57, I could say, 57, 58, you know, somewhere in that year.
And then you graduated in?
It was about 56, maybe 56, right, come to think of it. Maybe about 56.
What year did you graduate? Were you class of 59 or 60?
59, 60. Because I started Grant. I mean, I'm Grant. I started UC at 60.
Fall of 60.
Fall of 60, yeah.
Okay.
So it's, I came out that year. I came out. Yeah, so it's, I would say, well, to count back, I would say about 55, 56. Yeah, you're right.
I guess so. The first few games you played was still when Grant was playing strictly black schools. Is that correct? Okay. What was the the Kentucky Athletic League? I think it was called.
Yeah.
What was the, you know, what were games like when you get? Where would you guys travel to? Who would come to?
You mean black?
Yeah, when it was strictly black teams versus black teams. Yeah, it was your first couple of years, right?
We used to travel to all the major cities because they had black schools there, same as us. They had, it was pretty much segregated. Wasn't allowed to only play black teams. So all the major cities there. We was the only black school in Northern Kentucky, period. Yes, and, you know, take Newport, Wilmington County, Covington. I think the closest black school to us was in Maysville.
Maysville Fee would have been a good hour and a half away, right?
Cynthiana. It's probably close to Maysville, I think. Cynthiana would
be okay.
Cynthiana was a class.
That's Banneker, as I recall.
Cynthiana, Paris, Cynthiana, Paris, Kentucky, Cynthiana, Kentucky. Lexington, Maysville. Well, Maysville's close to Lexington, so it's that was the closest schools, black schools. So went to Bowling Green. We had to go all the way to Bowling Green in Western Kentucky. Went to Lexington, Louisville had Lexington has two black schools, and Douglas and Dunbar. And Louisville had two. I think Louisville had about two. Then Bowling Green and Fee High School in Maysville, and Paris Western in Paris, Kentucky, and Cynthiana. That's Lewis Stout. That's kids down there. Well, you know, it's.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you played against Lewis Stout, Cynthiana.
Yeah, Cynthiana, yeah. So it's a. That was a. My memories serve me right. Those were the closest schools, black schools. And we had some pretty stiff competition, you know. That's some good competition. Frank, Kentucky. So I can remember some good days of traveling. And one thing, I had some pretty girls. They're pretty cheerleaders.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Was there much interaction with the other teams other than during the game? I mean, did you guys get to know each other the court?
Oh yeah, it's much different during those days than it is these days. Now these days, kids go to play ball and they have no social communication with these teams other than playing ball. It's contrary to our times because we were excluded from all the other frills of life experience and freedom to roam around the cities. we're confined to whatever our opponent's confined to. You know, they come to Covenant, it was confined to what we're confined to. So consequently, you had to stay in hotels within that community of that black community. And some of those schools didn't have hotels. I mean, some of those small towns, they had black hotels, so we had to stay within black families of those teammates, of the alumni, school alumni. So we had good communication, good rapport.
You know? Oh, you would go far enough away to where you'd have to stay the night, and you'd actually stay in a family of like the players' families or extended families?
Yeah, I remember going to Pikesville, Kentucky. We'd stay in the families of the extended teams. And we stay within families because they didn't have facilities for blacks to be in hotels. So we had to stay with black families and black teammates and stuff like that. So it was a close knit rapport with during that time. You know, it wasn't like it was a distance. And same here when they traveled to us, we did the same. We host the same way.
That would just be set up ahead of time. Certain players stay in certain houses.
So to say, it was all set up a certain way, and it was very, very smooth because it was all schools like that. All black schools like that, it is. And some cities we was fortunate enough to have black hotels. Some cities we was fortunate enough to stay in. I think we went to. I remember going to was it Ashland or somewhere down there. We had to travel all the way to West Virginia State Hotel. So from Ashland to West Virginia, how far was that?
A good 20 minutes today. It might have been a lot longer then.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's how far we had to travel to the hotel because we didn't have no place in Ashland State. So we had to go to West Virginia, I believe. I remember that distinctly. We sat in the hotel, a little flop house hotel. So it's we can sit here and laugh about it because it was funny now. It's funny now. It was funny. It was kind of funny then. It was pathetic and funny at the same time, but that's all we knew. We didn't know any other way but that. We couldn't protest or demonstrate. We know we could say, shoot, we had to go this far. And being kids, what the hell we knew? We didn't know anything.
Right.
We thought we was happy to sit in a hotel because we never stayed in a hotel. And then kids, yeah. We never stayed in a hotel, so that was a good big deal for us.
Did the Grant team ever come across to Ohio or go to Indiana? Because that's within reasonable distance.
Ohio, several times. We played DeForest High School. It was a black school.
Is that in Cincinnati? Was that in Cincinnati?
It was in Cincinnati, DeForest High School. It was only three black schools within the whole tri-state. You know that? Only three black schools.
What was the one in Indiana?
There was no Indiana.
Oh.
We didn't have
What was the third? It was Grant.
Grant was one black school.
Du Bois in Cincinnati.
DeForest.
Oh.
DeForest High School. St. DeForest High School in Cincinnati. Down on Clark Street, downtown in Cincinnati. No longer exists.
Was that a... said Saint DeForest? Okay.
It was Catholic school. DeForest High School was a Catholic school. And also Lachlan Wayne High School, Lachlan, Ohio. Lachlan Wayne High School. The great Joe Martin was a coach out there.
Okay.
It was only three. It's only three black high schools within the
whole within an hour
tri-state.
Okay.
That's including Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky. So you know, and that's I would say within an hour away. If our way, you take us down to Kentucky, it's more, I think it was more in Kentucky, or take us in Dayton, Ohio, so it was in Dayton, Ohio. We didn't go, we did go to Dayton, Ohio to play. We played Dayton Dunbar High School, which was about black school. But that was only schools on how we played my first two or three years, but we did play a white school, same Xavier, downtown Cincinnati. We played same X downtown Cincinnati. I remember that my senior year.
Is that the same St. X that's now in another place,
another
I guess?
Another place, right.
Big Catholic high school.
Big Catholic high school. Same X, and one of my teammates, Mark Altenaut, he went to UC. He and I became teammates. I played against Mark Altenaut. He's a doctor I'm alternate now, and another big kid in Xavier went to finally went to Xavier. I played against him in Xavier too. What's his name? I'm trying to think of his name. Oh, big kid, Alan Xavier. Xavier High School, went to Xavier University. We played against each other in high school and in college. I can't think of his name right now, but my memory is so bad. It wasn't Plunkett, Dave Plunkett. But he's a big kid. Zane X downtown, a great team.
What was that encounter like when you guys played them? This was when nobody in Kentucky would yet play black schools, you're talking about, right? First couple years?
Yeah, when we were in the black league, we couldn't get any black schools, any white schools to play us. But I think it's only first year though. My second year that's when we got into the league.
Kentucky High School Athletic
League? Right, Kentucky High School Athletic League. So we played all the local teams like Holmes High School, Covenant Catholic, Newport Catholic, Newport Public. We encounter all those teams.
Well, tell me how that went about. So surely, what do you remember from those? Do you remember the very first game that you would have played in with Grant going against an all-white team? Do you remember what game that was?
I have no recollection.
Really?
Okay. They called Jack Brock for that one, man. They all meshed together. My memory's all smushed together.
Well, man. Do you kind of remember maybe you don't remember that very day, but do you remember that experience first year went?
Yeah, I remember the team experience. I remember that concept of the experience with we played like Holmes High School. Was one of the top teams in Covington. We played at Holmes High School, and we beat them pretty much. And we played Covenant Catholic. That was a good experience because prior to leaving to our Savior, I was supposed to go to Covenant Catholic. One of the first blacks in Covenant Catholic, but it was too far out. I didn't want to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and catch a bus.
Kevin Catholic was willing to take you and everything. Yeah. You just didn't want to.
Yeah.
Have to commute that far.
Right. It's too far from my house, where I can walk to school in 2 minutes. Going to Catholic, it's gonna take me about an hour and a half or 2 hours. Get up early in the morning, catch a bus from downtown Covington, all the way to Dixie Highway, which is far away out. Fort Wright? Yeah, Fort Wright. So I opted to stay. I stayed in Grant. I went to Grant rather, but the experience was fabulous, because we got the schools. Covenant Catholic had a great big school, beautiful. Boone County had a big school, one of the biggest schools we've seen. Holmes had a small box. We practiced our games sometime at Holmes, so it wasn't too thrilling to play at Holmes High School. But who are the other schools? I'm trying to think of some other schools that were locally. Dixie Heights had a pretty fair gym. Dixie Heights and Newport Public had a good gym. Newport Catholic. Newport Catholic was a pretty good gym. We had a real good, brand new gym, Newport Catholic. So the experience was phenomenal because we, that's the first time we played in a gym, with as many white people. Because we used to play in a gym all black.
Talk about the fans.
Our fans, yeah.
What was that? What was that like?
It wasn't particular any earth-shattering experience other than the fact that you just seen a different complexion up there, because we had to, especially when we played Lexington Douglas, Louisville Central, we had a fans, we had a fan base of almost 3,600 people. Which was considered big in high school during those days, because high schools, I think our high schools only hold about, maybe the biggest school we had in Louisville Central, we had a humongous gym, brand new gym. They held about 3,500 people. Lexington Dunmore was really big. Our gym was so small, we had to play at Holmes High School.
Was that where you guys played your home games? Holmes?
Yeah.
Even when you were playing strictly black teams in the first couple of years?
Holmes High School.
And
Holmes High School. You can only get about, 1,800 people there, which was considered big.
Compared to Grant, that was the step up.
Grant was here about 300 people at Grant. That was a step up, right. And we sold out every game we played, we sold out, standing room only. I mean, he had to buy tickets and weeks in advance. That's how popular we were. Everybody wanted to see us play.
Was this because this team was just so good?
It was so good.
Yeah. The Grant team.
I don't care who team we played. Any team in all of Kentucky was sold out. I had never played a basketball game in my high school life that the gym was not sold out. You know, it was always packed. It was always a three-ring circle there. You know, we knew we was going to have a big game. Like every game was a big game for us. Every game was a win game because everybody wanted to beat us, wanted to beat Grant. And the only team that probably really had their way in terms of nip and tuck was Lex and Dunbar. It was big. They had a big powerful team, and Lower Central, they had a big, big powerful team. And when Lower Central and Lex and Dunbar, and we meet, I mean, it was almost like the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers meeting. I mean, it was game of the year. That was a good experience. That's some good memories I have in high school because our fan, our base fans, used to get on buses and cars and follow us. And we used to have more fans at other gyms than the hometown fans would have. And that's one thing about, as I came to Cincinnati and watched these high school games play, I said, where are your fans? I mean, it's high, empty high school. The kids don't have their parents don't come. Our whole town turned out to watch our game. That's why we had so much fun. Good memories. Mother, father's game, sister, brothers, grandmothers, and grandfathers, and everybody came.
Go ahead. You're going
to
say
something? No, I'm just saying, I was reminiscing about the fan base we had. This pick up on what I left on first time. I say we that's not only in my era playing, but way after my era playing, it's always been that way. It's been that way before I was playing because I grew up watching some of my cousins play ball at Grant. And we used to pack the gym, watch them play. It was good ball players. And then after I graduated, my cousins and friends, brothers played after that. And the gym was still continually being packed. So it was up till the integrations. They dissolved Grant School. It was always been that way.
And Grant didn't have any football team during your time, right?
During my time, he didn't, but
way back there.
Before my time, they did. They had one of the best teams in the state of Kentucky. They had one of the best teams. I mean, their team was so good. They played college, small college teams. That's how good Grant.
Do you recall that? Was that when you were real little? Did they have it still, or even before you can recall?
Before I can recall, but they have pictures of it. They have pictures, and they have people. They're legend people. When I was growing up, people used to still talk about how good their football team was. And I said, gee, I wish I would have been there and watched those guys play. And I've got dozens of pictures myself of Grant football teams because my uncle played on them, you know. My cousin, my uncle. And at one time I wrote an article myself on my local magazine, Nip Magazine, one of the coaches, one of the football coaches, and Paul Redding, Mr. Redding was a coach. I got some old pictures of him and our Grant teams, and I saw him walk up there with a football hammer on, little cardboard hammers. I couldn't believe they had a little cardboard, but they was a tough old football players.
So do you remember Paul Redding yourself?
Or? Yeah, I remember. Yeah, he was there. Mr. Redding was there. When I got there, he was there. He was just leaving.
But the team had quit having a football team, but he was still working at Grant.
He was still working at Grant.
Teaching, I guess?
Teaching, yeah.
Okay.
And then after that, I think he sort of retired because Mr. Brock came there and took over. No, Mr. Gilliard is a team. Before Mr. Brock, Mr. Gilliard, Walt Gilliard was a coach. And then after they brought Gilliard, Mr. Brock came.
Okay.
So that's all that coaching.
When Brock and you guys went and played at you know, Dixie or Newport or wherever, yeah. and you said that you were speaking to the crowd, just different, you know, just different faces, different complexion, you said. Mm-hmm. But how were you received by either the white teams or the white fans?
Well, it was mixed. It was some schools there. I'm pretty sure there's comments in some schools, but we had our coach, Brock, told us things are like that's going to happen, so you have to ignore the people in there. It's all type of people there, so you ignore what you can ignore. And we had some names calling, pretty sure. Maybe remember one or two. We had some I had name calling in college, so that's one of the big things to ask you. You know, if I name calling in college, they have some name calling in high school. But we ignored them, and we continue. And how we got back with it and quiet the crowd was to beat these teams. And our coach office tell us, you cannot go in the third, fourth quarter by 2 points even, because the referee was not going to give you a break. And so we had to beat the team. We had to have the team be leading by 25 points in the fourth quarter. We'd be leading so much that the referee's trying to hurry up and get the game over it. Because the referee, we didn't leave it in the decision of the referee as to what to call. Because if he left it in the hands of the referee to make a decision to call the game, in terms of foul and things like that, the referees would call in favor of the white teams because we had no black referees. We only had one black referee, and we got him, we had two blacks. One was Scoop Brown out of Lexington, Kentucky, and one was Mr. Scott out of Cincinnati, Ohio. There was only two black referees I've seen in my life from high school. So all our referees are all white referees. So
I've heard of Scoop Brown. Is he still around?
I don't even know that. He's from Lexington, Kentucky, Scoop Brown.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a person you really should talk to.
That's what I was thinking. I've heard Lewis Stout was telling me about him.
Scoop Brown. Did you ever talk with Coach Roach?
On the phone. He's still around. St. Roach.
St. Roach. He could probably tell you what Scoop Brown's around.
Okay.
Yeah, he can. That's a good person.
He coached Dunbar, right?
Yes, St. Roach. Roach did. Yeah, and he could definitely tell you what a Scoop. And he could. I'm pretty sure Scoop's could give you some historical moments of refereeing too. But anyhow, that's why we were so attentive about beating teams because we knew it came down to a decision as to who get the call. We wasn't going to get the call.
And how obvious was that? I've heard that from other people.
Obvious. Very obvious. It was like a black and white. That's how obvious it was. And because, you know, the thing is, we did that. We encountered that in the state tournament. I remember the state tournament, the first state tournament too. We made a move, a referee called traveling. I mean, I made a spin move that was that's everybody doing it today. It was traveling back then, but now it's not traveling.
Was it traveling back then at that moment, you mean, or in general, because you're playing a white team?
I don't know. I really don't know. At that moment, because playing a white team in general, at that moment, all three, yes. And we made spin moves because we used to play basketball at a different pace. And a different pace was constitute much faster, higher above the rims. And if you're not used to seeing things like that, then you're going to say, well, how did he do it? There had to be something illegal. And so you have a tendency to blow the infraction up on it until you see it, constantly see it and see it and put it into your into your mind as a part of our repertoire, our movements. We do it automatically. And like I said, we played a different pace, different beat. We heard a different sound. So I guess when you're not listening to the same sound we listen to, it's going to be odd. So that's why we had ourselves several encounters with that. That's why our coach kept stressing the importance. Beat teams right away. Don't wait till the last quarter to beat them. Beat them in the first quarter, you know. And that way there would be no decision making as to, you know, who the game is going to go to.
Do you say there's a difference in style and pace, and these white referees were, you know, a year before refereeing only white games?
Yeah, it's only. Yeah.
So now they're refereeing these interracial games, mm-hmm. and I understand that the black refs, other than the rare examples you gave, didn't get the jobs. They were kind of phased out. Was there also, you think, some of the white referees and some of the poor officiating, was it also to protect the white team's record? I mean, do you think that was part of it too?
You can surmise and say yes, and then again, you don't know. But I would say it's unfamiliarity, protection, and racism. You know, all three of them, all three, yeah. And it could be one of, you can pick, take your pick. Yeah, that's all I can say. You know, because if they guys come over today and not familiar with a different style, he's gonna wonder if something's wrong. He's raised up a different culture, and all of a sudden he starts seeing another culture. He's going to favor the culture he's raised up in. As self-servants, you know, it's going to be that way all the time. It's going to be as human nature.
Mm-hmm. So, what are your posts? I know you guys played. You won, I guess, the region in 57 or so,
yeah.
A couple times. Was it more than once?
Yeah, we won the region. I think we won. I think the only time we didn't, I'm trying to figure out the only time we didn't win the region. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure we didn't. But the district, I know we lost the district to Dixie Heights because the last second one of the players slipped on the floor because the windows was open in Dixie Heights gym. The floor got humidity. Got moist when the players slipped. Last second, the guys got the ball and laid it up. We lost that district. We came in second though. So I guess first and second still go to regionals. And in the following year, we had a person got to guard the windows. We played in the same situation, same scenario, same situation, played the same team with the same championship. Dixie Heights again, the Dixie Heights gym.
Is this the? I think I drove by that school the other day. Is that the one that's there now? It looked like it would have been built in maybe the 50s.
Yeah, it's. I'm pretty sure they've got a different gym. They got a different gym. That gym was down, and the windows up here with the casement windows, and you get 2,000. You get not 2,000. Probably get 1,500 people in there. The whole place cold outside. Get 2,000 sweaty people in the heat in there. All the moisture come out, and that's how the condensation builds up. So I'm pretty sure they got a new gym.
Okay.
Haven't been to Dixie since then, but I'm pretty sure they got a new gym. Yeah. So yeah, you drive by Dixie Heights, just seen building. I know they've got the football, put a new football field back behind Dixie. I'm pretty sure they got a new building back there too. But anyhow, I remember going down the state tournament though. That's one of the fascinating places.
Yeah. Tell me about that. So you got, was that played in Lexington typically then, or Louisville?
I was both. Both. Well, the first one I encountered was in Lexington, down at Memorial Coliseum. Memorial, that's before Rupp Arena was built, naturally. And I've never seen so many people in my life. I mean, it was that, Memorial Coliseum hold about 16,000 people. Oh man, I said, God, you play against so many people. That's, now that you got a time to be nervous now. I mean, I played against so many people, man. I said, gee. But the thing about it, you know, I played against all the people, but it was strange to me. I didn't see those people. I was in the zone, I guess. All the people was blacked out. And I was just playing basketball, and it was like just on the sandlot. And I can vividly recall that right now, that I played a game down there, probably one of my best games I played down there. It was 15,000 people down there, I can recall too. But we had some pretty good games down there, and Freedom Hall was even better. Freedom Hall seemed like it was even bigger than Memorial.
Like it is.
Yeah, it was big, Freedom Hall. Big city and everything. Louisville, we always enjoy going to Louisville because of the big city. You know, we were small town boys in Northern Kentucky. On the big city we saw was across the river in Cincinnati, and we wasn't allowed to go there over there.
Did you run into other all black teams that you'd played before or the years before in the tournament from other parts of the state?
The only teams we played was Bowling Green High Street. Bowling Green High Street rather, and Lexington and Dunbar, Louisville Central. that we constantly ran into because they always made it to the Allied region. Other black teams, and you know, they just wasn't powerful enough to make them, you know. But it's usually Bowling Green, High Street, Louisville Central, Lexington, Dunbar. And those are teams we pretty much ran into all the time.
And you the Grant team never did actually win a state tournament, did it?
Oh, no. That's one of the things I always regretted, that I never won the state championship team. I got close to it, but never won it.
Well, you've got some other championships to be proud of that are a little bigger, so.
Yeah, I wish I had always wanted to win the state. I figured, you know, after I got older, I say, well, I didn't win the state championship. I say, maybe I can get a high school coaching job or coach the state championship team, but that never happened either, so. So maybe one day I'm going to see my grandson win the state championship team.
Grant was strictly black until it closed, right?
Right.
White students never really came to Grant.
No.
Some blacks did leave Grant to go to Holmes. Is that correct?
Right, Holmes. I think they went all over Boone County, Dixon Heights, Newport Public, Public Catholic. You know, it was pretty well. It's pretty much scattered. A lot of went to schools in Cincinnati.
What was that process like? Were you still around? Were you still over in Covington as that was beginning, or did that kind of happen after you got out of high school?
After I got out of high school, I'm pretty sure that, yeah, because I came out. I don't think the full integration happened until around 66, 67.
That's when Grant closed, wasn't it? About 66, 67 or so?
I think so, too. That's when they closed, I think. But during the time when I was in high school, I think kids were allowed to go to other school then.
You know? Right. They started. It's your choice, I guess.
Yeah. As a few of them might have got out of the school. I know a couple of them, but he went to Covenant Catholic. You know, the first blacks to go to Covenant Catholic. Hollis brothers. The Hollis brother went to Covenant Catholic.
That Fred Hollis?
Freddie Hollis and Henry Hollis, yeah. And I know a bunch of kids went to Newport, or lots of kids came to Newport Public. I mean, they're from Newport. They walked to school from Newport to Covington, so they naturally stayed on that side of the river, which is Newport. A lot of kids went back to Newport, stayed in Newport.
Do you remember playing any when you were playing? When you would play at Holmes or one of these other predominantly white high schools? Was there ever any black players on those teams that you were playing against, or were they pretty much all black, all white?
Yeah, I had never played against a black player.
Unless it was an all black team.
Well, I tell you what, you take it back. Newport Public is the only school I played against with a black player was on.
Do you remember his name or who that was?
It was Bonner. It was the Bonner brothers. Herb Bonner. I mean, one of the Bonner brothers. I forgot his first name, but Bonner's. There's a lot of Bonner brothers over there.
And if it had been just a few years earlier, he would have been at Grant anyway, or maybe an older brother.
Yeah. Older brother. Yeah, Bonner's. Yeah, the Bonner's. He played at Newport Public. He played with John Turner, Dick Boers, and all those kids. And they was a big stars, Newport Public.
Did you ever consider transferring to Holmes?
Never.
You would have been entitled to if you wanted to, right?
I mean, so Holmes, Grant had a better team. I didn't want to get beat by Grant. I lived in the district of Grant, traveled to Holmes. Like I say, only a few people went to the white schools. They were students. They didn't done athletes. You know, it was just students.
They probably went for student reasons, you think?
They went because they lived in that area.
Okay.
Like a lot of people live in Independent. Or Erlanger. Yeah, a lot of kids went to Erlanger because they lived in Erlanger. They came from Erlanger to Covenant Grant to go to school. Independence. So they stayed out there in their district going to school because it's closer. It's much than traveling all the way. Newport. They stayed in Newport to go to school. And we had kids from Erlanger. They went to Erlanger. They stayed in Erlanger. A lot of kids from Erlanger. A few people in Independence, they stayed in Independence, went to schools out there. integration, so in Newport. That's only three places I can really think of right now that the kids stayed and went to school there.
And that was because that was a different district. Those districts were paying those students to get down to Grant back then, and then suddenly made more sense for them to stay. But if you were like yourself growing up in Covington, you would stay at Grant as long as it's still open.
Yeah, because as you mentioned before, those districts had transportation, provided transportation for students to get down to Grant, buses and so on. During that time, it was vans. We had a van of kids come from Independence, Kentucky to go to Grant. Van the kids come from Erlanger. So, you know, so the states say, since we're integration now, you stay out in Erlanger. But like I say, we had choices to go there. I stayed in Grant because during that time, I only had about a year or so of going to school. So I figured I'd tough it out.
Well, you clearly had an awesome high school basketball career, and you ended up going to the University of Cincinnati to play. Mm-hmm. Did you have other options to go to different colleges, or how did that work back then? Did UC come to you? Did you try out? What?
No, UC came to me. I had over 100-some offers to go to school, and during that time, over 100 offers was a darn good many offers because, again, colleges was not integrated to the state where they had black players to the extreme, because in the high school, the only place I knew was integrated. Well, I had my heroes. I had guys like Tom Hawkins, Notre Dame, Cy Hugo Green of Michigan, Cy Hugo Green of Duquesne, Johnny Green from Michigan, really. Michigan State, you know.
Were these people you just admired, or you knew? Were they from around here?
No. These kids,
the stars.
Magazine. You get them out of magazine books, okay, and you see the black athletes in magazines. So you put them up there. Bill Russell, you know, and Elgin Beller. Those were my heroes. I was in high school. They were the star, you know. Let me see. Who was it? The boys from Kentucky. Went to LaSalle College up there. The Ricketts brothers, Dave Ricketts.
Where were they from?
I think they're from Kentucky, Centennial, Kentucky, somewhere around that area. They were big stars up in Duquesne, and during my time, the college that you looked at, you guide towards, you rooted for was a college in the East, like LaSalle, Duquesne, Holy Cross, you know.
So Syracuse big back then?
Syracuse was not big as Holy Cross, LaSalle, Temple, Duquesne. You know, that was a college you had blacks at. We didn't see blacks at Michigan State, Ohio State, and teams like Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, and we didn't see blacks there. We saw blacks at UCLA and San Francisco. And, we definitely didn't see the blacks in Southern school. That's completely out.
I was going to ask you, were these offers that you got, were any of them from south of here, south of Covington?
I had one from Citadel. You know Citadel is?
In South Carolina, right?
Yeah. Citadel, I said. Union, I had one from Union, Kentucky. You know, Citadel and
Union College, Kentucky.
And a lot of black schools, all of black colleges, right? Kentucky State, Wilberforce, Central State, you know, West Virginia State, you know, all black colleges. NYU was a college, UCLA, NYU college I looked at because they was after me. Seattle, Washington, where Elgin went to school. Yeah. Matter of fact, I went to Seattle and visited there, stayed with Elgin's parents when I was trying to get into Seattle. I liked the new NYU. It intrigued me because in New York, you know, big city of New York. And that's one of those colleges I was really leaning towards, NYU. Colleges I never heard of before. You know, I'm pretty sure it was halfway decent.
And what? So why did you end up at UC?
My hero went there.
Who is?
Huh?
Your hero went there.
Yeah, my hero went there. Who do you think?
I think I know, but just the audience may not know. I don't want to prejudge here.
Oscar Robertson.
Now, was he, how much older was he than you?
Well, Oscar was, well, put it this way, I was a freshman, he was a senior.
Okay. When I went to UC. So he was already a big star, and while you were playing high school ball, you heard about him.
Yeah, well, we both, well, yeah, when I was in high school, he was enter UC, big sophomore star, you know, he went to New York and broke all the records. You know, he was a star. So he was the closest stars we had.
Where did he grow up? Where did he play high school ball?
Indianapolis.
Crispus Attucks High School, Indianapolis. Okay. High school,
right. Crispus Attucks.
Did you guys ever play that school?
No, never.
A little far to travel.
Yeah, we our budget was very limited.
Right.
$55. I had $55 would be a lot of money because. Yeah, slings only 18 cents a gallon. 18 cents a gallon. You can buy a couple of sandwiches for $2. Pretty good.
Well, when you tell me how that transition was from Grant High School to the UC Bearcats.
You know what, the transition, I thought going to college is, to me, it became a myth. I thought college was going to be, guys is gonna tire for me to run me out of the gym and do this to me, do that to me. I mean, I was looking for really tough guys in colleges. Keep it same with the college, university society. Look for a tough competition. And it was surprising to me when I got to UC, I get there and we practiced. Well, one of the things I got to UC, I was in the AD department office, and one of these kids came in. He had stripes up down his sweater. High school kids came in. I said, "This kid is tough, man. This kid's got all kind of credentials, you know. He had these captain stripes and all state. I think he's from Florida. I forgot the kid's name. I think I knew. If I go back, I'll probably get his name. He had all state, all this and all that." And we got in the gym and practice. He would, I said, like, this guy was nothing. I said, was he good? I mean, I just ran circles around the guy.
And he was playing for?
No, he wasn't playing. He was being recruited by UC. And he was up there like me for the summer.
Same age as you.
Same age as me. And we hit kids from all over and playing summer basketball over there. And like I say, I thought this competition would be so good, but apparently I was well schooled in terms of the competition I played against. Growing up with, they taught me pretty well because all the competition I ran into was below. I felt it was below me, and I found guys on the playground back home. Stuff these guys at UC. I said, well, these guys back home were killing you guys, man. I said, these guys they didn't want to get in school. They didn't want to go to school, but they was tough ball players. I mean, they were so tough they could outplay me. But these kids didn't want to go to school, or they couldn't go to school. Either they didn't want to go to school because they didn't want to go to school, or their grades, or they had other interests. And they was tough ball players, and they taught me how to play ball. And when I came to play against these guys, kids. We graduated from all honors from different various states. We played that summer. I was surprised, and to my surprise, I mean, I outplayed all of them. And then when I got to freshman was even easier because they had a selected few people that came to UC. And it wasn't that much of competition, you know. And I was ready for them, well prepared for them. Other competition was less. I think I was well prepared for them. I like to say I was well prepared for them because the training camp I came through was much tougher than the training camp I encountered at UC. And because I was grateful because of Coach Brock prepared me in terms of skill wise and knowledge of the game, and the older guys I played against prepared me likewise. It was to my delight, as you mentioned, as you can see, the rest was history. I made to the UC team, and we had success after that, all after that. And I only contributed to the fact that my buddies I play against on the Sandlot teams. Mm-hmm. Sandlot like games, rather. I contributed to that to high school competition out in Kentucky I played against. They made me tough, you know, Louisville, Lexington, Dunbar, Douglas, Cynthiana, all those teams.
Now, was when you played on UC's team, I guess, was that the first team you played with white players on the same team for you?
All-star, the Kentucky all-star teams, like East-West all-star teams.
Okay, but I mean, that's a different kind of...
Different, yeah.
Those are the same teams. Those are kind of temporary. I mean, yeah. UC, yeah, you know, same locker room week after week.
Yeah, well, you know, I played with the First Methodist team out of a white team out during the summertime. I played with white guys from different high schools in Covington.
Okay, kind of a rec league or church league?
Yeah, church league. Jim Shoemaker and Powell Dixie Hikes and other guys out of Holmes High School. That was a permit throughout the whole summer. I played guys like that. But
did you do that in summers?
Summer.
Through the high school career?
Through the summer high school.
How'd that league go? I don't know anything about that. I mean, was that pretty harmonious?
It was a church league, and we played lots of games in Cincinnati. We played out of Cincinnati. We played. We were very successful. It was very successful, and you know, I was probably the only black guy on the team, out of all white guys, and it was very successful. We won the leagues all the time every year.
Well, once you were in UC and you're playing on the college level, to what degree had the color barrier been broken in college play? I mean, did you said earlier you ran into some prejudice. As a player, but you know, what was that like? You played from 60 to 64, is that right?
Yeah, 63, because you were not allowed to play freshman basketball. You had to play 3 years of ball.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was, you played on the two teams that went to won the championship?
And one team that didn't win it.
And the third one
didn't win, right?
Was runner up?
Runners up, right.
National championship, yeah. Runner up.
Right,
okay.
Right.
You know, just give me an understanding for the racial situation in the college level at that time. I mean, I know it was integrated officially.
Oh, well, my recollection of the time is that I remember as a freshman, Miss Hugh was on a team. I think it was Tony H and I. It was only two blacks on a team. And then I got a football player who came back and played with us. But we was only two blacks on the team, on our freshman team, Tony Yates and I. And we pretty much, I had no, well, I may have been ignorant to the fact that racial prejudice might have been there, but I never slapped him in the face.
And UC played what teams back then? Who were some of the regular?
Missouri Valley Conference.
Yeah, St. Louis.
St. Louis, Bradley, Drake, North Texas State, Wichita State,
When you guys traveled out that way, that's a little bit further south. Was there any problems there?
Yeah, well, I never remember my sophomore year, and we went to North Texas State, and we're out in Denton, Texas. We stayed at a barrier behind the hotel. They was building a new wing on a hotel. We stayed in that branch. The main team stayed in the big hotel. That was segregation right there. And we encountered that as a guy. University of Houston, it was my, maybe our sophomore year, we had the public announcer.
You're saying it, Denton, Texas, the introductions.
Yeah. They introduced Paul Hogue, which is black. George Wilson, black. Paul Hogue's a black center. George Wilson, black forward. Tony Yates, a black guard. And me, Tom Thacker, a black guard. And then they say Ron Bonner. And we can hear all the crowd was booing. All of a sudden, you hear this white Southern talk, this Texas. By golly, I thought they had a white boy on that team. Now, I remember one year, my sophomore year, Bob Wiesenhein, they would call him the Big Bear. Bob Wiesenhein was the roughest guy, toughest guy in UC, man. He
basketball. And they made the rules of excessive swinging elbows. They made it, called it Bob Wiesenhand rules. Because Bob Wiesenhand used to knock people out coming down, swinging the ball. Nobody got around him. Anyhow, we went to Houston, University of Houston. Guy Lewis was the coach down there. And one thing, we got down there and they started throwing ice down there, called all the sambos and everything else. And during the game, Bob Wiesenhand came down with a rebound and started swinging his elbow, excessively swinging his elbow. It wasn't illegal to do that then. You can excessively swing your elbows to clear space. And the elbow contacted one of the star players and knocked this guy out. Boy, we got bombarded. Everybody, white or black, got bombarded with ice and cups. So we had to take us off to the field and back into the dressing room until everything cleared up. That was pretty much a little tension. But remember flying now also down in Texas, we had to stop through Alabama airport. We would got off the plane and stretched our legs. First time I encountered this in the airport, color restroom, white restroom. So we went in the restroom, say, we know the coach now coming there. Paul Ho, he don't want to smoke. We went there and smoked a cigarette. So, the coach is not going to come in here. We can smoke. Don't worry about it. So he went there and smoked a cigarette. Got his color restroom on me. And another counter racism. I remember.
Had you not seen colored and white restrooms in Kentucky?
In Kentucky, yeah.
But not in the air. By the time you were flying, that had kind of.
No,
or the places you were going, that didn't.
No, not. I've seen it in Kentucky in high school, but you know, by the time I got in college, you know, I thought it was
pretty faded away.
Yeah, but you know, because I never flown south until I got in college, you know, and that was the proto south I've flown. But the real stopper was in college during the NC2A finals. We won down in Louisville, Kentucky. We beat Ohio State that year. George Wilson and I were staying at Brown's Hotel down in Lexington, and Brown's Hotel. George Wilson and I, and George Benson from Chicago, boy, he never encountered this racism in a million years. We went to down across the street to a little greasy spoon on the corner, greasy spoon on the corner, exactly what it was, a greasy spoon. Wanted to get a hamburger. The big old greasy guy came out there, a white guy with a dirty napkin, talking about, well, so we don't serve no color boys in here. Colored people in here. And George Wilson got a little irate because of the comment he made. And he said, what you mean? George Wilson wanted to jump behind the counter and punch the guy. I said, George, you're in Kentucky now, let's go. I said, I'm used to that. I'm used to it, so I know where to go. I know when to hold, when to fold. I know where to go. I said, George, forget it. George, forget it, George. I had to pull George Wilson out of the place because he was highly upset because he couldn't get served a hamburger after we just won the NC2A. And so we went back to the hotel. I think we got a hamburger in the hotel. But that was one of the big encounters in college. I heard about the encounter they did Oscar Robertson down in South Carolina, the black cat in his locker room, you know, things like that.
What happened? What was that? I don't know.
During a classic tournament, basketball tournament in South Carolina. South Carolina, North Carolina. One of the Carolinas. During the Dixie Classics tournament.
Kind of a not a postseason tournament during the season.
Yeah,
right.
It wasn't a postseason tournament. It was a tournament like the classic Christmas Classic. This is Dixie Classics, and I was a freshman. He's just naturally Oscar was a senior, and a black cat is in his locker room. I guess the fraternities, you know, fraternities are they do all kind of strange things. Anyhow, they threw a black cat in his, and it was not an encounter that. You know, and other things, small things that I probably forgot about a dozen or two things, but one of the things, big things, I was a good baseball player, very good baseball player. Matter of fact, I was a better baseball player than a basketball player in high school, and I wanted to play baseball in college. And I went out there, and Glenn Sample was the coach. I batted and practiced with the guys, and I mean, I always bat left-handed. because he smacks on home runs. I always bat left-handed and do everything in right-handed. And I know I was better than those guys, baseball players. I couldn't go because I the University of Cincinnati traveled south. And they didn't allow blacks to travel south in the 60s. That's why I couldn't play baseball. That was.
Were you told that, or does that just become a reality to you?
I was told that. I was told about the culture. We were going south, but they played a lot of teams in the south. And then, you know, blacks wasn't accepted in the south, you know, during the 60s. Another thing is, I had two thoughts at one time as far as trying to figure out which one I'll get first. Billy Howard, Mississippi State, became a teammate of mine, Boston Celtics, 1968. He told me a story that they had to sneak out of town the night before the postseason tournament to fly to Michigan on a charter plane to play against the black team because white Mississippi wouldn't allow them to play black teams. And the whole town was going to work out. They had to sneak out of town that night to fly up to Illinois somewhere to play against in the NCAA tournament against a black team. Totally against it, you know. So it's you encounter so much racism that you say you just knew where to walk. You know the stones were to walk on, so you wouldn't sink. So there was I had another thought of racism. Temporarily lost it, but we had all kind of problems with people and places, and I'm pretty sure we got denied a lot of things based on racism, based on being black, playing at the University of Cincinnati, because we were pretty good. We beat all the teams. Matter of fact, I think if my record, my memory serves me right, I think I only lost about 7 games in my whole college career. Which means a lot of teams were totally against us, a lot of fans were totally against us. And we had, the thing about it, we was the only team that had 4 black starters. I mean, no other team in the whole nation of college had 4 black starters.
Is that right? Okay.
No other team in college history had 4 black starters. Our senior year, we got beat because we only had 3 black starters, and the team we got beat by had 4 black starters. So that was the first time the nation was black-white television. The NCAA championship played with more than they had 7 black stars on the team.
This was what? This was
1963.
And that was
Loyola Chicago beat us.
Loyola?
Loyola Chicago. They had 4 black stars. We had 3 black stars. And it's the first time in history that many blacks donned NCAA floor before. And that was history being made itself. So we made a lot of history. We did a lot of history making ourselves. Like I say, it's the first time many blacks that won NCAA, because I think prior to that, I only had 2 on a team. I think 2 per team. 1 or 2 per team. So we sort of changed sports, as you mentioned at the start of the conversation, the host. Sports is one of the accelerating factors of integration across the nation.
You think that smoothed things over in Covington as a team, you know, in the late 50s
Yeah, I think it smoothed things over in respect because other schools became pretty much equal or pretty much at par once the blacks started going to their school. They had good black athletes, and their teams got a little stronger prior to that because of that. And I think they was more readily accepted, more so than they would have been if they had just been plain students. They wouldn't have been accepted because the equal opportunity didn't extend for beyond as far as education. It only extended for as equal opportunity for sports. Sports and musicals to the greatest factor that sort of contributed to the widespread of integration. You know, something that people could pretty much relate to, sports and music.
When you were at UC, did you have much encounter with the Grant school and the kids that followed you there, or Coach Brock?
Oh, yeah. When I was at UC, I sort of came back to the schools and watched my old team play. I went to the state and watched them play. Then I remember my cousin played West Ansel down at the state tournament. And I was in college and came in and went to watch them play. And Covenant Grand was the only team that came close to beating West Ansel. The rest of the team, West Ansel, them beat by at least 30 to 35 points. I think they only beat us about maybe 10, 8 or 9 points, something like that. And but they had a great team, West Ansel. He wasn't the biggest guy. He had a buddy on his side bigger than he was. But they won the state that year. And they you know.
Seneca High School?
Seneca, yeah. Yeah. Seneca High School. Mike Reed, Wesley Ansel, and all those guys. Yeah, some really good teams.
Okay, so after being at UC and playing on in three national championship games, you went on and played professional ball.
First round draft pick of the Cincinnati Royals. During that time, it was territorial. Territorial draft choice, that means everybody within a 100-mile radius of the school you went to, if a professional team within that radius, they got you first.
Is that right?
Yeah, so I was a selection of the Cincinnati Royals.
Now, was that an ABA or NBA team?
NBA. There was no ABA teams. There was no ABA teams.
At all, or in
at
this?
At all.
When did the ABA, I'm a little ignorant about this. So.
ABA started 1969.
Oh, okay. I thought, so the NBA has existed much longer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
NBA is the grandfather of all professional teams.
Okay.
NBA team was the Cincinnati Royals, so we was in a 100-mile radius, so Cincinnati Royals had rights to everybody came out of Kentucky, Louisville, Ohio State, Indiana, Purdue, UC, Xavier, all within 100 miles plus beyond.
And that's why Oscar played there too then?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why everyone was
there. So you both went?
Yeah.
He's got a couple years, he's 3 years older than you.
Yeah, 3 years experience than me, yeah.
And so how did professional sports go for you?
I think I had a conversation started, I lost 7 games in my high school career, I lost about 9 in my college career, so I wasn't used to losing until I got to professional. So, I lost so many games my first year in professional sport. And again, racism played a great, great part. And I had a coach, Jack McMahon. He wasn't too fond of putting too many blacks on the floor one time. Until we played a team like Boston Celtics that had 5 blacks on. St. Louis Hawks had about 4 or 5 blacks on. Then I had to, my choice was to guard another black that my white counterpart couldn't guard. So prior to that, he didn't want me and Oscar to play together, but I was an Oscar substitute, so you know how many minutes I played. Sometimes zap, because Oscar never came out of the game. But when he came out of the game, I went in, but he would never play Oscar and I together. You know, I don't know. And they had Oscar, Wayne Embry, and Tom Hawkins. And then later on, Happy Harrison came, so. It was very reluctant to put 5 blacks on a team on the floor one time. Like I say, the only team that in the NBA was heavily integrated was St. Louis Hawks and Boston Celtics. And in Philadelphia 76ers was another team that came pretty much close to it. And then, you know, Abbas in my, after that, and then that other professional teams started getting a lot of black, low number black. Los Angeles Lakers got pretty much about 3 or 4 blacks on their team. And after that, the skills of trying to have the best team went up in terms of adding blacks to the roster.
Race became less of a factor.
Yeah, race became less of a factor. The real race was a race to win a championship team. Regardless who, what color they were. So that was the real race. So that's what happened throughout my NBA career until I played played for the Cincinnati Royals. And the 1966 game, I was into a pool of expansion teams. I was one of, you know, all the teams in the NBA could freeze so many players. And the other players, maybe four or five players you can freeze. You have to let the expansion teams pick from the free list, freeze less players. So I was in the pool being picked. 1966, I was picked up by the Chicago Bulls.
Okay.
So I went to Chicago Bulls. Nate Bowman and myself. Nate Bowman's from Wichita State. He and I went to. He was picked to go to the to make the Bulls roster up. So I was there with Nate Bowman, and I went there. I went to Chicago and worked out with the team and played. And I think during the exhibition game, that's when I got hurt. I got hurt. I was playing with Jerry Sloan and all with Jan Rogers, all of them. And then I got hurt recuperating. I went to Muskegon, Michigan. They had a Continental Basketball League up there, some CBA league up there. And while I was been recovering from my injury, I just played ball up in Muskegon, Michigan. We won the championship up there in 1966 and 67. Yes, we won the championship there in Continental League, Muskegon, Michigan, Muskegon Panthers. After that, 1966-67, we won up there. I went to, I got picked up to go to Boston to replace Casey Jones, retired in 67. So I was his replacement.
Really? Okay.
So I went to Boston and played up there in 67, 68. Bill Russell's first year coach, first NBA black coach.
Wow.
We won the NBA championship in 1968.
So you have been, this goes back to your statement earlier, you've been on a NBA national championship team. You've been on a CBA?
CBA
national championship team. You've been on two college basketball national championship teams, but you didn't win the Kentucky State championship, which is the what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, in 1968 we won the team, and then I was placed in another pool, 1968-69, extension pool of the Milwaukee Bucks came into existence. So again, you can only freeze so many players, and I was picked from the players to fill the roster in Milwaukee Bucks, Wayne Embry and myself. So instead of going to Milwaukee, that's what was the birth of the ABA, 69. So the ABA had chosen me out of draft choice. My choice was Houston Cougars. Was it Houston? No, was it Cougars or Houston? Houston. Timmy Houston, I forgot what the name.
It wasn't Rockets, right? That's
no, it wasn't Rockets. It was a Houston team. So I went to Houston to work out for Houston. I didn't make it that well in Houston in the ABA, so I went to Indiana. Indiana, one of the guys I knew in Indiana was the general manager, was Mike Starnes. Mike Starnes is the was a PR man, Cincinnati Royals, was a public relations man. People in the Cincinnati Royals, so he became the general manager. So I call Mike up, say, Mike, I'm down in Texas, and I'm not going to work out with the Houston teams. They're good. So he said, come on to Indiana. So I went to Indiana and played half the season. I guess the season already started, so I played makeup games with Indiana. A year.
What was the team name of that?
Indiana Pacers.
Okay, same as today. Yeah, same but it was ABA, ABA still? Okay.
Yeah. So I called with them 69, 68, 69, 70. So I stayed with them for 2 years. And we won the championship, the ABA championship. That's the year we won the ABA championship. So the year I stayed up to 72, and I got injured. And forced me out of basketball. My knee got so bad I couldn't. I was dragging my leg up and down the floor during the games. I was really forced to retire. I figured I had another 4 or 5 years if I hadn't gotten hurt. I could have played ball, but I enjoyed the championship with the Pacers, Indiana Pacers. We had fabulous years. We with Dr. J, all of them, Mose Malone. We had, I mean, the ABA would have been more successful than NBA during those days because they was more exciting. More people came out to see it. The reason it folded is the fact that we didn't get the contract. If we had the television contract that they have today, you know, television contract bringing millions of dollars with all the endorsement and advertisement, we probably would have been almost like the NFL and the AFL, you know, side by side in terms of popularity.
So the NBA, when did the NBA kind of become a monopoly? Was it with television contracts? What did it? You're telling me?
They helped. Red Auerbach was probably the key factor in holding us out of the contracts.
He was the coach of the Celtics.
He was the spokesman of the whole NBA. He was like, you know, during those times in the 70s, the monopoly was, I mean, you had one spokesperson and it monopolized everything, and Red Auerbach was a key factor in not having the television industry having us a contract. If they had ESPN back that days, we'd have definitely been still, ABA had been popular. Pretty much popular.
Right.
We didn't have the exposure. The only exposure they had is the local television. They all were behind the old established good old boys, the NBA. But in 1976, as you mentioned, the NBA absorbed the 4 teams out of the ABA and no longer exists the ABA. So they took San Antonio, they took the Pacers, they took the New York Nets, they took the Denver's team, and actually they took the St. Louis Spirits team. Nobody knew that, but the St. Louis team, they took 5 teams. The St. Louis team, the owner down there, opted not to put a team in the ABA, but what he did, he's probably the smartest ABA owner of all. He said, I don't want to put a team in, but you guys are going to pay me for the rest of my life. Like I am the NBA player, and right now today he is getting checks, millions of dollars checks, without even flowing the team down there. Can you believe that? That's the research you should do right there. This
guy made a smart move. Now, so after your playing career was over, you came back and coached at UC.
After my playing team years over, I came back and went to grad school.
Okay.
I had no idea what I wanted to do. You know, I was about 29 years old. Yeah, I came back here and said, what the heck am I going to do the rest of my life? I said, let me spend 2 years in school. So I went to grad school, community urban planning. I took that for 2 years. I graduated my degree. I got a job in Covington, the relocation director of relocation. I was probably the first black ever had a position like that in the city of Covington. I was the first black man. And so my job was to relocate all the houses, tearing the houses down, relocating people, urban renewal. That was my job. And after about a year or so over there, I was in college, doing grads, because matter of fact, I was on this thesis dissertation, was effect on blacks and whites in relocating. It was one of my dissertation in grad school. I wrote on that because I have all the records, all the information on that. That was easy accessible to me, so that was a very easy thing for me. And I got my graduate from master's degree. I went on to become, where did I go there? My memory's serving right. I went to, planning, director of planning of American Red Cross. That's where I went to. American Red Cross, I'm director of planning for that.
Cincinnati. In Cincinnati,
yeah,
okay.
Down Sycamore Street. I was director of planning for about 4 years, and after that, I left out and went to, I was deputy director of Urban League in Cincinnati also. I became after 4 years of Red Cross, I went to deputy director of Urban League, the community chest right on Reading Row for Urban League for about
three or four years, I think. And after that, I became a coach I'm trying to figure out what came first. I became coach at UC, yeah.
No, this was the UC girls head basketball coach.
Yeah.
And I'd read that you were the first black, head coach of any kind at UC.
At UC.
Now, what was that? Was there any fanfare around that, or was that pretty? What was that experience like?
First of all, I got a big fat salary, $500 a month.
Coming from the NBA, ABA.
It was more or less almost like a volunteer basis. I was pretty much trying to figure out what the heck I should do for the rest of my life. So I figured I'm going to get coaching. So I got into coaching, and I became a coach of UC girls team. And it was because prior to that, I think the one I thought I was being on the paper. The girl took before me. She said she got $200 a month. We laughed. We had a reunion about several months ago. We laughed at that, about that. But that was experience. I was the only black coach meet my opponent. Not only black coach, only male coach of all women's team. So I was in all this big, large auditorium, coaches' clinics and meetings. I was the only guy there. Not only the only guy there, only black guy there. only black coach there.
I'm sure the tallest person there too. Yeah.
Right? So I had only black coach, only black guy, only male coach. So I was. You talking about left-handed in the right, all right-handed arena? That was me. That was I. All these coaches, females walking around. Look at me strange, but we had a pretty good team at UC. I kicked some butts at UC. They resented me there. I said, coaches. And, style wasn't different. I just made the girls a little more aggressive. They got a little more aggressive, a little fast, a little rougher. And I played a little rough ball. It was all the coaches. And you got your girls playing rough. I said, well, they're basketball players. They used to play that little timid ball on them girls. I think we're gonna play a timid ball now. We're gonna throw elbows and be rough. And all the coaches protest me, didn't they? You know, it was a protest. Time Packers
too aggressive.
Yeah, these are girls. I say, no, they're girls, but they're basketball players too. But I had a pretty good year at my UC. I think I came out with a winning record. Yeah, I think.
How many years did you coach the girls team there?
I can't remember. It must have been 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
Maybe 3 or 4 years, something like that. And then from there, I went up to Wilberforce University. I've been in Wilberforce, Ohio, and I coached the girls' team up there, too.
Okay.
And I had a good record up there. And then after that, I went down to Miami University in Hamilton Extension College. Miami, the boys. I coached the boys down there for a couple of years down there. So I coached. And after that, I say, I'm finished with coaching. I can't get a coaching job. Every school across the nation I wrote to, I inquired about application. I got the old runaround that back in the 70s. Don't have experience. I mean, what does it take to have experience of coach? They want me with 4 years experience and but yet still, years after year, I watched coaches get appointed to different teams. I looked at experience was less than my experience. And that was racism to the full extent from that part, from my process. So, racism, I encountered a lot of racism, like I say, in terms of getting jobs and coaching and playing basketball, every day. I think I would probably have been a pretty good boys coach too if I got a good. And you'd be surprised how many coaching jobs I applied for across from coast to coast, small house and big colleges. Not only for a coaching job, assistant coaching job. I could make assistant coach. I figure I'm willing to be assistant coach for a couple of years until I get to
college level. Usually, you're playing
boys. I'd be assistant coach. I know I have to be. I have to pull my toe, like everybody else. I'm willing to become assistant coach for a couple of years until I apply for a collegiate coaching job, but it never materialized. They want an instant experience. Instant experience, but yet I see guys from high school or no experience at all came up and coached. And after that, I said, well, before my time, I'm a little too far before my time. I waited. And now, as you know, these coaching jobs are opened up to everybody now.
Right.
With or without experience. And some of the coaches I see right now, some of the coaches, big name coaches I've seen over the periods of last 20 years, they couldn't coach. They just had a big name. That's all. They can't coach. They never won the championship teams. They just had big names. That's all. But what I experience, I can probably tell you stories after stories after stories. The stories I told you thus far, this has all been my life experience.
Yeah.
And how I feel about it.
Well, I want to thank you. We're pretty much running out of tape here. Okay. This has been a very good conversation.
My pleasure. My pleasure just to drop my chest and give it to somebody.
Okay.